And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And you know, all things considered, Andy, I'm a pretty glass half full kind of guy. And so that's why I'm really glad that I can start this podcast on a really positive note this week.
Oh, yes.
So the announcement of Jacob Townsend as the homecoming hero this week with his Southport Sharks coming to town to play our VFL team, I think that is as unambiguously a well-received announcement as the club could possibly have made right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. He remains a cult hero to us all. Perhaps if the club announced that the Hoskins Twins podcast was going for an extra bonus hour, that would have also been well received. But yeah, I think Townsend's approval rating is universally high. And obviously there's a South Point link, but you know, there's also a GWS link, and I enjoy that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's crazy that he's still a reigning VFL Premiership player with Richmond, whilst having played on his third different club since then.
That is a good stat. Nicely done.
Mm. I think there'll be a lot of Richmond people really pleased. I mean, there's a friend of the show, Ryan, who I think is going to the game just because Jacob Townsend is the homecoming hero. I mean, you know, the GWS game looks like it'll be a good game of football anyway.
As the club has reminded us, plenty of good seats still available.
Yes, plenty of good seats still available. The betting line could almost not be closer. They're a team, we're currently on the betting odds in the bottom half of the top eight. They're right there on the fringe of the top eight, which seems fair enough given their result last week against Sydney. So yeah, it's going to be a big game, and I like you mentioned that he played for GWS, but you know, I think it's also, he was part of the Coalition of the Willing in that wonderful preliminary final against GWS as well. So, yeah, a lot of good memories.
Indeed. And it is nice that you've moved on from the start of a positive start to this podcast. We apologise for doing it slightly later, but it was we both had personal reasons that delayed us, so apologies, but it's allowed time to ruminate and gain separation.
Do we have to?
I think, the problem is that I had all this content prepared, Nick, and now...
So do I. I've got a page and a half as well. I'm just procrastinating.
So there was one thing that several people, if I may draw you to the unfortunate business of the professional football game that Richmond played on in last Thursday, that... A few people said, "Is it Johnny Cash territory for the intro?" Which is something we've done after really bad losses. Which is we best said no. In fact, probably listeners who've joined us after I think 2000. I don't think we've done it since 2015. Obviously,
no, we did after the preliminary final loss in 2018. It was the Dirty Three, but it was extremely depressing music.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, fair enough. Good memory. But anyway, it's something we drive the big guns, and we both agreed that it wasn't appropriate to draw out the full funeral music.
No.
However, I will say that one of the songs we've used in really bad times is Johnny Cash's cover of Hurt, Trent Reznor's Hurt. Yep. The opening line is "I hurt myself today to see if I still feel." And a little bit of that game, Nick, and maybe we can talk about it a bit more a bit afterwards, but in the lead up, during and after, it is still a reminder that even after all these premierships, that football can still have these really big up and down and up and downs and very strong emotional reactions. I was like hyperventilating before the game. I was so nervous.
And I was
basically, you couldn't talk to me after Prestia was injured. Found out because someone behind me said that he was crying in the, who was here listening to the radio broadcast, said that he's crying in the change room. And, you know, I was mute for about 10 minutes after that. And for all the ups and downs, if I could take a small positive from it for me, and I'm sure we'll find others, might have to scratch around, it was nice to get that really guttural feeling from football again, that it could still, I still hate Carlton, their supporters are so
obnoxious. And they're after a 9-year drought, they're understandably feeling themselves, but yeah, it's easy. Yeah, God, they're...
And you know, Nick, I was only sitting from 50 metres sort of round from where we sat in 2013 in that final. Mm. And even before the game started, and unfortunately the last quarter did have some power, that did remind me of it. But straight away, before the bounce of the ball, I was reminded of the 2013 game. Like, it is still, you know, there are just some things that will forever be in memory, and there'll be so many good memories as well. But, you know, in a weird way, this is such a strange thing, but in a weird way, like, one small thing I'm happy about is the rivalry is back. It's no longer, you know, that really guttural feeling that the Carlton of the youth used to bring out in us. Yep, it's back. So, you know, game on in the rivalry, and let's hope that it's more back and forth now and doesn't go on a very long tear in the other direction now.
I know. Look, I think you are asking about positives. I've had this feeling in games before, but I did have a feeling that if we could get anywhere close to break even in midfield, we're winning that game quite comfortably. Mackay looked threatening when he was on a long lead, somewhere around half forward or the wing. You know, Kerno bobbed up once, maybe twice. But otherwise, you know, I feel like our defenders, and we'll talk about them more individually, but I feel like they held up. And I feel like if we'd got enough football in space to Lynch on the night, Shea, Dusty, George was busy. Like, I feel like either end of the ground was working pretty effectively. But we got flogged in midfield, which is unfortunately still the most important part of the ground.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we were minus 24 on the inside 50s. So I think the stats back up your theory. And, you know, even the last quarter was atrociously bad. It was 22-2 in inside 50s.
Yep.
But even then, we were winning comfortably 4 minutes into the fourth quarter with a negative inside 50 differential, which, yeah, I think the both ends. And the analysis we had before the game, and I definitely have to say this, but, you know, I was more worried about the defense. And as you say, the defense was fine. And, you know, Carlton hit the post, I think, 5 times in the game. So, you know, we rode our luck a bit. But
although on expected score, the margin was slightly closer than the actual result. So it wasn't, you know, our set shot goal kicking still causes me pain and anguish. So yeah, the result was fair.
The defense, I thought the defense was fine. You know, Gibkus was not outstanding, but he also wasn't like a fairly nondescript debut. Was actually not a bad thing for a tall.
No, I had that exact note. Like, for an 18-year-old key defender, which as we've said, there's no contemporary Richmond precedent for an 18-year-old key defender to debut in round one. And, you know, we've talked before, Rance and Grimes played VFL reserves their first year. Astrey had a few games, mostly as a forward. None of them have been competent AFL players, and he was clearly confident. We were able to move Bolter forward and shuffle things around, and it was a good effort. His kicking still not inspiring.
Yeah, but at least we got that one right.
What you're looking, does he fit in? Well, yes, he physically fits in. He's tall. You know, he's a bit on the skinny side, but he certainly doesn't look out of place. He spoiled the ball effectively. From the under 18s number one intercept marking player from last year, we didn't really see that. So if anything, it's exciting that there's this base of competence that he can take some pride in, I think, and knowing there's a long way to go to improve, but it was a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely, and I don't think we need to talk about everyone because the game was a while ago, yeah. And people have want to move on, but I was laughing during the game when things were still going well that this might be the first time in Dimmer's entire career where he's done the old school shitty 80s move, the key position back to the forward line, and it could turn the game winning match that every boomer and the journalist in the crowd was nodding approvingly about, well, this story's writing itself, and we can get 5 weeks of debate about where Bolter's going to play. But sadly, look, he was being used, he actually was being used effectively as a spark plug. The bit that was disappointing was when we tried to use him as the ruck spark plug in the last, when everything else was going badly, and that didn't work either. So, he was.
No, you do. You wonder.
It's not his fault, but yeah, he wasn't.
No, you wonder if things were too far gone at that point. Points to Dimmer for trying, but yeah, it didn't. I think perhaps as he said, looking forward, does Jack's injury sort of put off the question of do we have too many tall players for another week and we just play Bolter as a forward with stints of with the ruckman changing up forward, but not as much as they did against Carlton, so less of the three tall look.
Yeah, so you might not be down to see on the TV, but for a reasonable amount of time, like not majority, but a significant minority, Soldo was our most furthest forward. So he was the sort of the playing the Tom Lynch role of the sort of the last man. So, and look, I saw two games on the weekend where teams North Melbourne also had a similar forward line set up to us. Obviously watching that closely because we've got their second round pick and also CCJ. And both teams looked at the North even more so than us, but different reasons, different players. But yeah, we looked too top heavy, and which I think you're very much implying, but yeah, the question is what you do next, and is it just one game because it worked fairly well in the practice game? Yeah, it maybe that question has been avoided.
Well, it's worked. Last time we did it, it worked well in a grand final. So I think it's worth persevering with. Although I note, GWS play pretty short. They had Matt Flynn as their number one ruck, with getting a chip out from Jake Riccardi. Right, you know, who's 194 centimeters. So, yeah, there's a question of, do you know, are we short a bit of run? And midfield is, as we'll talk about more, is going to be the main question. So, yeah, it's tricky.
It is tricky, and the sort of we've been circling around. We have mentioned the core issue, but and look, obviously Prestia's injury was catastrophic to the midfield matchups, and it's, you know, one of the reasons it's inconsolable is, you know, the before the game we talked about this premiership midfield deserves the benefit of the doubt until proven otherwise.
And it looked great in the first quarter.
It did, and then Prestia, who has chronic injuries, couldn't hold up. And the thing that really struck me is, and this is what was true about the 2019 team, is, and it's an opportunity now, don't worry, this is going to end on a positive note, but some of the guy in 2000, several years ago, we've done this podcast so many times where I've come on and said, I thought we were going to lose when that injury happened, and we didn't, because our other players were so good that they could carry us. You know, the Edwards might step up, or Dusty might just go supernova. And they're getting to the stage in their careers where they can't, you know, they didn't, I mean, Carlton have a big good midfield and deep, a comment which they made afterwards. But some of these guys, they don't have the juice in the legs. They still can be good players, but they're not, they can't be all world. And perhaps now they need, Dimmer needs to find, and I think this is a real opportunity for Dimmer, because going back to, I think he went to his safe spot and he gave the Premiership heroes every chance, and the Arts and Graham and sort of Premiership heroes plus good role players. But I think we're going to need some more juice in the midfield now, because we can't rely, Prestia comes back, it's a bonus rather than to be relied on. And I think it's a real opportunity for Dimmer, because, the midfield needs reinvigoration. And perhaps the reason I started this about talking about structure is perhaps the 2019 structure doesn't work as well, because the midfielders might need another sort of centre-foot square player rotating through, or can't cover it if one of them gets injured. Anyway, that was a long ramble, Nick, but I do see opportunity in the crisis, the fact that, but I come away from it thinking the midfield needs something else. And one other point I was going to make, sorry, Nick, this is going for really long. It really hurt us when Baker had to come into the midfield to do some of the reps when Prestia went out.
Yes, well, and it hurt not just because he was excellent as a forward, but also if you look at his centre clearance stat, he wasn't particularly effective at clearance either. So we were were losing both ways.
I just with the eye test, I thought Baker was our most likely forward. He hadn't sort of put it on the gap.
Oh, other than Che.
Yeah, but I just thought it felt like a few goals were coming, and it never came because he got shifted, because of Prestia's injury. So yeah, I thought that really hurt us, and such as life. It was, you know, I think before it, I wish we'd actually done the segment of top three players you don't want to get injured, and I would have had him number two after Dusty. And
yeah,
it's hard to know now because it's perception bias afterwards, but I wish we'd thought about it beforehand.
I know. Oh, and it's so frustrating. Like, Prestia's looks so good. The contract-wise, you know, I think Richmond have done an awful lot right. I mean, as a three-time premiership winner in recent years, and the decision's very much, well, and part of that has been, you know, big long-term contract for Dusty, big long-term contract for Tom Lynch, as well as, you know, the unexpected hit to the salary cap from COVID, you know, all of which meant we haven't had a great deal of flexibility in recent years, so we very much we've sought to reward premiership players by probably giving them slightly longer, lower value contracts than we otherwise would have. And I don't think we've put too many feet wrong in doing so. But Dion Prestia has played 18 games in the last 2 years and is contracted to the end of 2024. That's a concern.
I must admit I had this a similar thought, but wasn't game to raise it. It is good. And actually, maybe, Nick, this is a good segue, is I thought Dimmer's and by the way, just full credit to the club, Peter Burgess' injury report and Dimmer's press conference are both superb bits of content. And they're just because they're prepared to speak openly and honestly. It's great. And Dimmer had a fantastic press conference, you know, just in general. He was very open, very gracious towards Carlton, didn't bully the journalists, all very good. Good things that the head of the most public figure of your football club should be.
Yeah, something that premiership coaches shouldn't do. Yeah.
But the one thing, and, you know, frankly, I was annoyed about it. Well, I think we were both slightly annoyed about the Jack Rome selection in hindsight. No forehand.
Look, but I think one thing you can take away that from what everyone says about Jack Rome is that nobody's going to be more disappointed with how his evening turned out than him. Like, I think...
Dimmer straight away just acknowledged that it was a mistake, and as soon as someone does that, you go, "Oh, fair enough. You acknowledged it. Well, like it was just really nice. I really appreciated his honesty and it was sort of."
You can even see why they, because the problem wasn't that he wasn't moving well or covering ground. Like on the tracking stats, he was his usual self, although. It should be on the tracking stats. Daniel Rioli was an absolute pig in terms of fastest player on the ground, most distance covered, most high speed running. Like hats off to his sheer effort. But yeah, Graham, you can see why fitness wise they played him. He was just off in his match practice.
Yep. And look, I'm still waiting for the Jake Stephen Morris as a forward apology, but I'll just keep writing my letters to the club on that one. But seriously, there was a moment at the end of it with Nick, which I interpreted in a different way. But I just want to put the two interpretations out there because it's something that hasn't been in the rest of the media. And like it look, frankly, it's hard to value add now. And there's so much. It's so many days after the. After the game. But it was an interesting moment in the press conference where Dimmer started talking about the Carlton midfield and very correctly said how big and impressive they were and started talking about Chera and his recruitment from the Dockers. And I think he was doing it just to stick up for, obviously, the Richmond assistant coach who used to be the Carlton coach, who he was just saying, oh, well, obviously they've got better players, so they're better now. So, he was just sticking up for Teague. However, had he been, and Dimmer does follow American sports, in that same American press conference when he was talking about how good Chera was as someone that Richmond at least theoretically could have got, people would have interpreted that as a sly dig at front office that you're not giving me the players that I want.
as a passive-aggressive dig. Yeah.
And but I did not think he meant that. But
I don't think he meant that because I think he'd know, you know, this was the price of the Tom Lynch dusty experience.
He wouldn't be the first American coach to just say find a way. But I don't think he did meant that, but I'm just saying that is an interpretation.
Well, the thought occurred to you. Yeah.
Yeah. If that was LeBron James speaking, he definitely would have meant it. But he also wouldn't have been like it, you have to see it in content. So I made an effort. I watched it a second time just to sort of see how he got there. So I'm not just being a Dimmer stan by saying that that was how I interpreted it in the end, but the other interpretation did occur to me. Nick, we probably should touch on the Rucks.
We won the head out.
I know. Thank you for noticing that.
Before we talk about the downside, look, obviously you've had some really special moments in your life. You know, we've attended two premierships together, you know, birth of your lovely children, your wedding day. But I have rarely felt your happiness from a great distance as much as I did when Ivy dished off to Shea for the opening goal.
Oh, there was so much happiness. Look, I enjoyed that. Look, the poor people next to me, I was so excited about Solo forward in the first quarter. And he did a like semi-competent shepherd where there was sort of two people going in. He did exactly the right thing. He used his big body and sort of was intimidating people. And, oh, my God, people around me would have got sick of hearing about Ivan Soldo. But, yeah, as, you know, as we ran out of legs in the midfield, it sort of, yeah, the enthusiasm, well, the last quarter, it speaks for itself. Everyone who did a midfield stint at that time needs to take some of the blame. And it was primarily Nank. He took 2-1 of the ruck hit-outs in the whole game relative to Soldo, and that's not even counting Bolter's moments. But it wasn't exclusively them, and, yeah, it did. We just didn't have the juice in the midfield, and whether that's playing too much tall in the rucks, you know, make your own conclusions. But I was greatly enjoying it for a while, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Jack Ross has had a number of games with more disposals than what he had, but I thought it was one of his better games. I don't like him as a centre square player all that much, but I thought it was convincing performance as a midfielder, more so than, you know, I think we've seen very much before.
Yeah, interesting. I know someone, a fellow Richmond fan, whose opinion we both respect, who thinks he is an inside mid, but I'm more inclined to your interpretation. He was definitely solid. I think we forget he was drafted in the 40s.
Yeah. And he's still, you know, he's still pretty young. But I think Riley Collier Dawkins, who's sort of, who's an unfortunate missing name in all of this discussion, you know, another guy who had apparently was having a really good preseason, but unfortunately, you know, this hasn't been publicly confirmed, but, you know, apparently he
it's implied.
It's implied. Yeah, he's had COVID, and, you know, he struggled a bit coming back. Which, you know, because God knows we need him.
Yeah, like, and the reason actually I was looking at the Ross's draft position was I was just thinking, you know, sort of, we're going to need that next wave now, and we're going to need one of these young mids we've drafted and to come through it. And so we're really looking at Dow and us, Riles, which I was having exactly the same thoughts you were.
And Tyler Sonzi as well.
Yeah. The author, I'm prepared to give him a leave pass for this year. But
No. Oh, I know. But, oh, yeah, there's no pressure of expectation on him, but I think his play accelerated the timetable for when we might see him in the seniors.
Yeah. Now, Nick, typical for us, we thought we didn't have that much to talk about, and we're already 28 minutes in on the game pretty much. I'm keen to move on. I'm sure you are, but there was just one or two other points I wanted to make. I thought Tarrant was solid in the build and actually better defensively.
It was fine. It was fine.
And Pickett, although I was slightly underwhelmed by his selection. You know, I thought maybe one of all of the players, Dimmer picks as the role players who don't have many picks, don't have many tricks. Pickett is definitely my favourite. I do like watching him play football.
Well, and I particularly like watching him play football on the wing at the MCG. Like he was, particularly in the first half, he was just covering a lot of ground between the 50-metre arcs. It was good to see.
And Pickett was on the champion data rating. He was the fourth rated player, and Ross was the fifth. And Castagna was the sixth. And I'll talk about him next week. There's something I noticed in his game, but I'll give it one more week.
I was pleased to see his marking was back after a pretty disappointing year last year, but yeah, no, I liked his game. As a, I thought arts was sort of well, and Jack didn't have a good game, and
well, he broke his thumb in the first quarter.
He his thumb, but otherwise, and arts sort of came into the game, with over time,
although,
in an artsy way, yeah. But the, you know, as I said, I thought the forward line was actually pretty convincing.
Mm. All right, I'm done for the game. It does still hurt, and I still feel. But is there anything else that you wanted to discuss?
Oh, look, I mentioned Dan Rioli didn't win a ton of ball, but like his. Yeah, as I mentioned, he just did a power of running. I thought his defensive work, you know, a little shaky as well. But you know, generally speaking, I thought it was a pretty decent effort. Nathan Broad was in his first back game back from a reasonably serious injury, and we sort of took him for granted instantly, and we haven't hardly talked about the fact that Dusty also back from a serious injury, and he looked great.
Yeah, I mean he was led ever. Oh no, he didn't. He had 500 meters gained. It was a very admirable. Actually, had six intercepts, which is unusually high number for Dusty. So yeah, he was great. He wasn't supernova, but he was great. And
he looked like you know, he like his old self, which was all that we could have asked.
Indeed. So now we've named every player except Tom Lynch, which I think we can move on at this point.
Well, I thought Lynch was fine as well. I thought it was disappointing that we're still in another round of nonsense about his contract, but you know, I thought if even playing a fair bit of the time against one of the best handful of key defenders in the game, it looked threatening. I didn't take too many negatives. I feel good that he's going to have a pretty decent season.
Yeah, he did have one possession in the last three quarters, but at least it was a goal, the one he did kick.
I just feel like if we'd got him more football and perhaps a little bit less competition flying for the ball, he's going to be fine.
I think that's a perfectly reasonable take. Beware of the overreaction to the bad Robbo take. That you know, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. But
absolutely,
I'm prepared to give it a few more weeks.
Someone else who's the subject of some media attention this week is Trent Cotchin.
I wasn't going to go there.
Mm. He looked fit, and he did some good things. But he had 14 disposals and only two in the last quarter. He needs to be better than that.
Yeah, I mean, him and Edwards, it's sort of they're just, someone else is going to have to carry it. Look, it's one game, but it's sort of, with Trent, it's a long term. Trent's role over the last few years has been complementing. He's rarely been the engine in the midfield. We're going to need to find someone to do that role. It's the sort of the preseason narrative about the burden of the captaincy lifting off him, and suddenly 2014 will come back. Well, it didn't happen. But
it wouldn't, no.
God, we would have loved it if it was. But, yep, point taken. I think this has been evident for a while, but at least he's getting out there and he's running and his hamstring held up for a full game.
Yeah, and I, you know, again, he's a really prideful player. So yeah, we need him to be a lot better against the Giants, and I think he'd he'd be expecting himself to play better as well.
I think actually you're selling some Posse socks this week as saying that you are enough. So, you know, maybe his socks have given him some enlightenment that football no longer does. Moving on.
You mentioned the comprehensive injury report. The sort of long story short seems to be Jack will miss a week, but perhaps a chance for the week after. Dion a couple of weeks. Camden McIntosh seems a pretty good chance to come back, but sadly, and Kane Lambert. Well, Flossie closer than Kane Lambert, but yeah. So we've got some pretty big names out of the team this week.
Yeah, the Flossie thing didn't sound good at all.
No.
And the Lambert thing sound quite optimistic, but I note he's listed as 10 weeks. So, everything, I guess, is relative to expectation. But, yes, if there's any help coming, it's Camden and nothing else. So it's just got to be the kids to put some fresh blood in the team. But it was good news. It was good. The analysis about Presti's hamstring was really fascinating, actually.
Hamstring problems. Yeah, it's one of the most detailed things I've Yeah.
And look, it did cheer me up a bit. Like, it's obviously a recurrent problem, but I must admit that sort of hearing it was reassuring. Anyway, moving on.
Well, so we started the show talking about Jacob Townsend. So the VFL men make their proper season debut this week against Southport. They won. Had three practice games. They won the first two. Had a bad loss against Carlton, which I don't think helped anyone's mood. Southport are pretty good.
Not mine.
No, Southport are pretty good as well. They're if anyone's been seen the club on the Gold Coast, it's an extremely large, well funded venue with thousands of poker machines, which has helped fund a quite good VFL team with a number of former AFL players. So, yeah, if we get up against them this week, that'll be a pretty good effort.
Yeah, I think they're the best football club north of the Sydney Swans, I would say. Oh, sorry. I would not say that, excluding AFL clubs. So, the best football club north of Ainslie, then.
Yeah, well, certainly the richest. They went toe to toe with the Brisbane reserves on the weekend, and yeah, they're a pretty competitive AFL team. Good to have that back, and particularly all the hopefully the VFL app is back with all the statistics that we love. Finishing off with the Giants, actually. It's difficult to talk about them all that much at the risk of repeating ourselves from recent years. And we've played them in any number of big games. We've played them in any number of extremely close games. Both teams have had the advantage on our respective home grounds. So. Yeah, the midfield worries me.
Yes, and after last week's, who wouldn't you be worried about? But they're a big, strong midfield. They like having they had way more contests. The total clearance count was much bigger in the Swans game. I mean, partly that's the ground, but yeah, it's not. Well, in some ways, an opportunity, right? Because we've just been very clearly beaten one way, and now we're going to get challenged in that area in a game. So it's a chance to respond. But they've had the same coach for a while. They weirdly play for a team that is full of Ferraris. They play a very workmanlike V8 kind of game. So yeah, it'll be a really interesting test. And Nick, you might remember that they flogged us in the second last game of last year. But they the Melbourne game was. and we have been sort of exchanging wins at home for the last few years. It was one of the best, our best game of the season last year.
Yeah, it was great. Well, they call it Dawkins' best game, from what I remember. It is such a deep and highly touted midfield, like Ward, Taranto, Tom Green, Kelly, Hopper, most of them top 10 draft pick, or almost all of them except for Ward, top 10 draft pick.
And Nick, if I couldn't like Green anymore,
and Canelio.
Yeah, wow. yes, long sigh. By the way, in 2019, before he hurt his knee, was, I think, one of the top three rated midfielders in the AFL. People forget that, aside from being a high pick, he was once very good at football.
We mentioned about Dion Prestia's contract. Canelio's contracted through the end of 2026.
Yes, indeed. And with a, like Prestia, quite a strong history of soft tissue injuries. Nick, if I couldn't like Tom Green anymore...
my God.
Have you seen that he's taking ruck contests now? So he took as many ruck contests last weekend as Noel Bolter did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't. He's so damn likable, and for people who his grandfather was a Richmond Premiership ruckman, so pedigree's there.
Multiple Premiership ruckman.
Yeah, well said. I think my favourite non-Tiger in the AFL.
Oh, look, if we were able to get one. A single player from any other club, he'd be very high on the short list, both for sentimental or practical reasons as well. But he's been in the Gold Coast Academy, the Giants Academy for years, and his other under contract more to the point. It's hard not to look at him a little wistfully. Grew up a Richmond supporter.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I wouldn't say no to Petrarca either, but, it's 6-1 does well, the other.
Well, but, exactly.
Now, Nick, is there anything else you want to say about GWS? Because I just wanted, there was one final unrelated story I want to end the podcast with.
Well, they are just sort of, they're not just the Rolls-Royce midfield, like there's the defense is pretty solid. Phil Davis getting a bit old, but Sam Taylor's pretty good at centre half back. Isaac Cumming and Lockie Whitfield are good half backs. Perryman's not bad, so there's a fair bit of talent there. If there's a weak spot, it's the forward line. Bobby Hill's not bad as a small forward. Himmelberg's solid, and they might get Jesse Hogan back, who's caused us some issues before. But yeah, it's we'll get beaten because we get overwhelmed in midfield. But otherwise, I don't think it's a forward line that's going to beat us one on one.
Yeah, I think. Well, pinch. Hogan might play. I mean, I have this exaggerated impression of Hogan's importance to the GWS because he almost won the game for them last time we played in Melbourne. But he could be back challenging. But yeah, it's so glaring. It's very rare. I mean, football's such a complex sport. There's so many things that happen. It's rare when you have such a singular explanation for a loss. As last week and the challenge coming up this week. So I completely agree with your analysis.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really worried about it.
So, Nick, me too. And actually, the odds have really swung in. They're basically a 50-50 game, effectively. But the implied probability at the start you know, a few days ago it was 60-40 to us. But things have clearly changed. I think I just,
well, sorry, the gambling markets, the money has come in on the GWS for what it's worth, for its predictive value. Now, Nick, if it's okay, I just want to tell a quick story. That it's got a Richmond link, don't worry, but it's related to my own football. There was a bloke on my team, really liked playing with, great skills, lovely guy, great attitude, always good for a laugh, kicks great goals from the boundary too, which I appreciate because it's all the things that I don't do. But his nickname was Tiger. And he's a fellow Richmond supporter, so it's great, you know, easy to remember. Remembered my first day of training, and that's what he's always been to me. And then I realised his name was Tony. And then we started this chat group in the team amongst fellow Richmond supporters, and then I realised it's Tony Hardy, and he started talking about his book. And I worked out that it was Tony Hardy who wrote the Jack Dyer book, who we'd interviewed on this podcast a few years ago.
Nice. And the both of you had no recollection of it?
Well, I had forgotten. I remember because I've read the book. Anyway, so I picked the book up over the last weekend, and I started reading it. It is a great book. So the point of this is go out and buy Tony Hardy's Jack Dyer book. I'm sure you can still get it online. It's a cracking read, full of stories about Richmond and the history of Richmond.
I certainly was able to buy it online last year. Didn't I give you my copy?
Yeah, you did. I should have given you credit for that. Apologies. It's signed a copy, by the way. It was really nice. And he's just been made coach of the team.
Nice.
Yeah. Congratulations to Tony. And thank you for taking on the role of coaching very limited footballers such as myself. But, he's a great football player, but he's a better writer.
Good times. Well, hopefully he, like everyone else, gets to see us win on the weekend.
Indeed.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy has played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Pick up Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Coming to slow. He's gone. No free kick, surely.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Tigers.